Welcome to Roll Better, a podcast about becoming a better role player and bringing more fun to the gaming table. I'm Nate.
And I'm Miranda. And today we're going to be talking about getting into character. And we have a special guest, Rena Henze, with us. Nate, who the hell do you think you are inviting Rena to be on this show?
I'm glad you asked. So Rena's our first guest for Roll Better, obviously. And the first person we talked about wanting to have on the show. So this is sort of unanimous. When we were talking about, you know, this is a show that will have individual episodes and guest episodes, and Rena was at the top of the list. Rena Henze's a queer, autistic, disabled horror gamer and writer. They've written for Call of Cthulhu, Cthulhu Dark, Vampire the Masquerade. Can be found in the Old Ways podcast, where they are head of Mythos. And as a cast member in Ain't Slayed Nobody, they've also made appearances on How We Roll, Symphony Entertainment, RX Oliver, Miskatonic Playhouse, and other horror RPG shows. And Rena's prolific in terms of content, both podcast, live stream, but also written adventures, published scenarios, all sorts of stuff. Most recent publications to check out, In Darkness We Wait, which is a collaboration with Joe Trier from How We Roll. That's out on Drive-Thru and we'll have a print-on-demand version coming soon. And A Long Day's Night, their most recent scenario involving 1950s mobsters. Of course, check out Rena. There's a lot of characters that you can check out Rena playing. Check out Rena playing Tamarisk and Vari on the Coriolis show Children of the Periphery for the Old Ways podcast.
And when thinking about getting into character, Rena was an easy pick for us as a guest. We've both, me and Nate, have played many, many games with Rena. And not only do they do an excellent job of sliding into a role, it always feels like they can quickly embody a character and make character decisions that really bring a character to life and bring that role to life. And the same goes for when Rena runs games and has to come up with new NPCs that the players will want to interact with. I'm assuming sometimes on the spot, because that's what players do. They put you on the spot. And Rena also does something which is very difficult for me, which is matching time period, because I still don't know when the telephone was invented. But we can dissect Rena a little more after we have caught up on what we've been playing lately. Nate, what have you been playing?
I've been playing this convention scenario, 4 hours, Signal to Noise. We have our third session, our third four-hour session planned in a couple weeks to finish that out. That's par for the course. I'm also prepping for a mini campaign of the Electric State that I want to do sometime mid-year. And that is a free league game that came out. It's another Simon Stallenhoag art book, The Electric State, that Free League has made into a game. It is a road trip in a nearly apocalyptic America adventure game. Some weird tech, a lot of weird science, and a society that's crumbling. Our two-part of The Electric State just got published from The Old Ways, so you can check that out. But I'm waiting for that Kickstarter to finally get fully released so that I can get in and plan out what's happening the end of this year. Miranda, what have you been doing?
Well, so last weekend, I ran a D&D game for some students in a young adult program that some of them have played D&D a little bit and some of them haven't at all. And it was an absolute blast to see these guys that have never played a role-playing game before get into character and make silly character decisions. It was a great time. And I have this idea for a scenario bouncing around in my head that will not leave me alone. And I feel like I, at some point, am going to need to pick Rena's brain about it. So wait for a message from me, Rena. What have you been playing, Rena? What have you been playing or writing lately?
So, obviously been playing Coriolis with The Old Ways. Been a lot of fun. Did that on Saturday most recently. I've also been playing in Cthulhu Dark campaign, The Final Revelation. We just wrapped that up this week, which is pretty fantastic. Highly recommend that campaign. That's Scott Dorward and Graham Walmsley. Originally for Trail of Cthulhu, I believe, but our game master put it into Cthulhu Dark and it worked extremely well.
That's a feel-good hit of a campaign.
Just, oh, yeah.
Really wonderful.
A wonderful multiple trips
throughout
to the Lake District. Just constant feel-good trips to the Lake District. That's all you need to know. Been playing a lot of Call of Cthulhu as well, various scenarios. And writing-wise, I am working on a 1980s scenario involving LGBTQ military service members called Friends of Dorothy. I start playtesting that next week, in which I'm extremely, extremely excited for this scenario.
I love that. I think the first time I heard the term Friends of Dorothy was watching the movie Clueless.
Oh.
That was my introduction to the term Friends
That's
of Dorothy.
That's fantastic.
But Rena, we wanted to have you on because you do such an amazing job getting into character and embodying a character. So I want to start off with when you have the most amount of time to prep for a character and work our way down to when you show up at a con and are handed a sheet. So you sign up for a game or maybe a campaign, your friends are all getting together and you're making your own character. How do you start thinking about how you're going to embody that character and that role?
So I actually have a questionnaire that I created that I use for all my long form characters for campaigns. I even do it sometimes for one shots or short form stories if I get my sign up for that far enough in advance and can create my own character. But it has your basic questions like, who's your family? How many siblings do you have? Do you have a romantic partner? Whatever. There's also deeper questions that I like to think about, like, what is your opinion of the supernatural? Right? If we're playing horror in particular, have you had any encounters? What do you fear losing the most? What do you value most about your own character? Things like that, these deeper questions, these more developing questions. And then there's also a few random things that I just find fun, like what's your favorite sandwich? What was your pet's name when you were two years old or whatever? Just these little random details that you can sprinkle in that make your character feel more fleshed out. So it's not just the big important stuff and it's not just your characteristics. It's what are the little things that get you into character? Like, I like think about my favorite sandwich and that helps me think about who they are as a person.
Oh, real life, role playing, it's all the same. Where did this come from?
Well, it actually came from when I was creating my first long form character for Ain't Slayed Nobody. And that would be for The Meat Trade, which is a Patreon exclusive World War Cthulhu. And I'd never played in this setting before, and I had a concept for my character. It's going to be a first-generation English, parents came over from Poland, all these things. But I realized I was having a bit of trouble figuring out who she was beyond being an artist. And so I thought, well, why don't I interview her and find out some things about her life? And so I came up with a list of questions that I would ask her. And so then I answered those questions in character, and then I just developed a questionnaire for each long-form campaign character I've created ever since. And then I have a generic one for short-form and one-shots.
Oh, that is fascinating. I have never heard of that technique before, but that is fascinating. And I know when I'm putting together my character, the thing I need to do is try and force myself to think of that character as a real thing. I can't think of an easier way or more straightforward way of doing that than in your own brain interviewing this future character. That is genius. So where did you, I'm curious about these questions, like where did the questions come, how did you come up with these questions or where did they come from?
So I started with the basic ones, right, that you need to know just for making your character sheet, your meaningful locations, your treasured possessions, your family members. And then from there, my brain went to, what are the things that make them uniquely them from a character personality point of view? So that's when you get your, what is the thing you treasure most about your personality? Are you loyal? Are you faithful? Are you deeply, madly in love whenever you fall in love? Like, what's that you treasure about yourself? And then what do you fear losing? Because the negatives about someone's character can tell you a lot about them as well. What are you afraid of? And so I went digging deeper and digging deeper and digging deeper into all of these questions, these ideas there. And then when I finished that, I needed kind of a palate cleanser. And so I started thinking about, okay, so what are the little details that I would put in to make this character feel real that go beyond just their motivations or their fears and their desires? If I was acting this character out on the stage, what are the things that I would do to bring them to life beyond two-dimensional? And things like favorite alcohol, favorite sandwich that I might order when I'm walking into a sandwich shop, or what would I order going into a bar? You know, what pet would I talk about if the conversation came up, things we loved when we were kids? You know, What fight did I have with my sibling the last time I saw them? The little things that really flesh out who you are as a character. So it served as a palate cleanser and helped me figure out a little bit more about who Irene was, and I've used it ever since.
I love the favorite alcohol piece because sometimes we feel like a character is an alcoholic and then you portray them as an alcoholic. But I would judge a rum drinker different than like a whiskey drinker and would act differently based on that entirely. And I'm a person that this is something that like I don't do perfectly well is fleshing out of character. I'm going to have to steal these bits from you, Rena, about kind of interviewing my character, because that's something that I find difficult is who is this person that I'm playing?
I find knowing some of these little things can inform how you respond in the moment when other things you may not know come up. So if you know what your favorite alcohol is, then you know a bit about how this person is going to approach, say, a fancy event, because you know what kind of alcohol they drink, right? What are they going to ask for at this fancy event, and how are people going to perceive them based on the drink that they order, right? And same with food, same with their pets. You get some of these basic ideas down, and then when you're challenged in the moment to come up with something, you already know some foundational elements, even the little details that will help you go, oh, I believe this, or my favorite pet was this, or my password to my computer is X, because you know what your pet was when you were 5 years old. Things like that.
What I like about it, too, a lot of times the advice or what you just come up with it in the moment. Oh, just use the energy of the scene and then come up. And people can do that. There's a lot of people that have fun and can do that, but a lot of people are stressed out about that. A lot of people don't like that, or they want more balance. Yes, I can come up with things in the moment, but I want a foundation. I want a backing. So this is a great technique for someone who either wants to explore this a little more or has time to explore it, or even just flat out, you know, I don't really want to rely on myself to come up with something in the moment because I might freeze. I might, you know, be stressed. That might be less fun for me to do than understanding that up front. And I also like it because whenever I'm coming up with something for a character, one of the questions I'm always asking is how long? And so, okay, here's this answer, here's this attribute, here's this characteristic, but how long has that person or that character done that or felt that way or had that? Is this like a long time since I was a kid, I was like this thing? Or is this something that just happened right now and then I can play with that a little bit more? And a lot of times that gives me really good inspiration what to do next. Oh yeah, this is a character trait. And so now I can make a big deal out of going against it. Or that was just a random choice here and I can make not a big deal at all doing something different. But if I actually plan that out a little bit, you could really play with that and have a lot of fun with that and almost plot out some of the character advancement or character development, character change that you might see in a longer campaign. I love that. I love that technique. I'm going to steal that. Sorry, I'm stealing that.
You're welcome to it.
Rena, I feel like people are going to ask this, but would you share your character interview?
Absolutely. I've got several that change based on whether it's for long form, whether it's for short form / one shots. And I've got a couple that change based on the time period. So there's some questions based on if it's Gaslight, some questions for the Old West, 1920s, modern, whatever. So I'd be happy to share those.
So now let's say you've signed up for a game on Discord and the GM's on the ball. Everyone gets to pick their sheets a week in advance. If you're in my game and we've planned it way far out, maybe you get them a month in advance. I don't know. And how do you start getting into that character's headspaces? Do you have a trick for picking? Do you pick a character that you feel closer to? Mm-hmm. How do you get into that? You've last pick even, and you just have like a week to prepare.
Well, I try to go for characters I haven't played before or characters that are not me, because I get kind of tired of being me sometimes and I want to escape that. Occasionally, I'll play a character that's close to my experience because I want to bring something new to that, or it's a form of catharsis in some ways. But if I'm last pick, I'll take whatever I'm given. But what I usually do to get into character is, after looking at the sheet, looking what their skills are, seeing if there's any traits or anything that are listed on the second page of the sheet by whoever created these pregens, then I like to write out three adjectives that describe this character. that aren't on the sheet. So I make a decision about who they are in my brain. Are they witty? Are they sarcastic? Are they amorous? Are they flirtatious? Are they depressed? Whatever those things, I pick three that I think would be interesting for the character. And then I lean into those three characteristics. So that helps me get into the headspace. I might ask a few of the questions off my list as well. I'm not going to do a full character interview, but I will pick a few of the really important ones, like what's your deepest fear? What is the character trait you're most proud of? Things like that. Just a couple of the really deep, important ones that help me really connect to them and then put them together with those adjectives. And then I look at the important people and go, okay, so my important people to me are my mother and my sibling. What are my relationships to them and how is that going to affect me as I come in? So I take a couple things from the character sheet, I take a couple things from my interviews, and then I come up with three additional character traits or adjectives and run with those.
I think something that I see players getting tripped up by in this specific scenario is investing too much in what's on the character sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find yourself getting stuck with a character that you maybe don't relate to because there's a really fleshed out character sheet? How do you kind of overcome that situation?
The really fleshed out ones are hard because then you feel like there's not a whole lot to work with sometimes. So with those in particular, I will add one thing of my own. I will pick one character trait. I will pick one descriptor. I will pick one interesting quirky thing, like maybe they have a pin of a dog and a cat that they wear on their lapel and they're constantly fiddling with it. And I'm thinking about, why do they have this pin? Why do they fiddle with it? Is it a sign of anxiety? Is it a sign of enjoyment? Whatever it is. And I give them that character trait that makes them unique to me, that makes them interesting to me personally. Because the whole character doesn't have to be completely relatable. But if you can pick one thing of your own that makes this character unique to you, that no one else is going to play them this way, it can really help get past the feelings of I don't relate or this doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and I feel like that's an important piece, is not feeling like you're stuck to what's on mm-hmm. the sheet too. Because like both of the tips that you've given have been building upon what you have on the mm-hmm. sheet and coming up with ways to make it your own rather than feeling stuck, moving past that.
Right. And you don't always have to go with exactly what's on the sheet. I mean, it can be a little bit of pressure if you're playing with the creator of the pregens sometimes. But in general, you can change things. I ran Hide and Seek, the Gaslight scenario recently, and I have a dilettante character who's written to be in their early 30s. And the player went with more of a Countess of Grantham from Downton Abbey sort of vibe and made them much, much older and gave them that more of that particular character direction. And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I think you can have a lot of fun when you're playing characters in that moment, whether it says that they're sarcastic, but maybe you're not leaning into the sarcasm as much, but you are leaning into something else that you think makes the character interesting. So you don't have to be tied to the character sheet. It's more like guidelines than actual rules, to quote Pirates of the Caribbean.
I get a little overwhelmed if the character sheet has too much of that stuff in there. If there's too much direction, here's how the person feels, here's how this character reacts, these relationships. I can't get all of that in me in time, usually. I mean, if you're given it and it's a Miranda game, so you have the character a month. Well, you could have the character a month in advance if you actually chose the character that you're going to play. We don't need to talk about that. But if usually you sit down, you get this character sheet, I'll pick one thing just out of pure, this is all I can do right now. I can really only take one thing off the sheet. And then as the game goes through, maybe I'll pull another thing off the sheet. Maybe I'll pull another thing off the sheet. But I almost need to, I don't know, monitor my intake of character information to the degree that I can actually bring that to the table. And because I do that, what I found is the knowledge of the GM, the keeper, whoever's running the game, of the actual pregens, it's all around the block. You know, some of them have not even looked at the pregens before, and that's fine. Some of them intimately know the pregens, and they're relying on stuff that's in the pregen character to move plot along or move stories along. But there's no one way that that works anyway. And the GM will probably give you hints or, you know, nudge you if they are relying on you to act a certain way because of the pregen and something that's set in it, and you're not. So you can sort of lean back a little bit if you are given one of these comprehensive character sheets.
So, Rena, it's the biggest time crunch now. You're at a convention. You show up 5 minutes before the game and are handed a sheet, or people are passing around sheets and taking a quick look and grabbing them, and you just have to pick and hand off to the next person. What can you do to try to get into that character fast?
So I pull one thing, either it's off the sheet or it's something I come up with out of my head, that instead of doing three adjectives, I pick one. Like, this character is going to be witty, or this character is going to be depressed, or this character is going to be cynical. Whatever it is, that's what I'm running with. And then I look at the other players. Usually in a convention setting, your characters are in a setting where they all know each other. To some extent, you're brought together, you're already starting in media res, whatever. Randomly, I will pick one player, say I have a good relationship with their character, and one player, I have a negative relationship with their character. Whatever that means, I'll figure it out as we go. I won't come up with it without knowing what the characters are and so on to begin with. But I know for a fact I have a positive relationship with you, Miranda, and I have a negative relationship with Nate, and we are going to run with that. And it really helps me get into character, because then I'm thinking in terms of character relationships and not just who am I. And that will really help me flesh out the character as we go, whether or not I relate to the character. It's like, okay, we've got a couple things we can run with here.
Yeah, there are a couple of systems that do that that I really, really enjoy that aspect of them. One being Kids on Bikes does that really well, where you go around the table and ask these relationship establishing questions. And I love that, and it works well in even a convention setting. And the other one being Monster of the Week. Monster of the Week does it as well, where you go around and ask questions about how you know each other and do back and forth. And so you can set up that kind of a relationship. And I think that does really help players immediately know who they can interact with and guide those interactions. So it's good. I love that tip of being able to just doing that within your own mind, you know, setting up, picking two people out that you're going to interact with that way. So you already have those kind of positive and negative relationships in your mind.
I do that as a GM as well, whether I'm running Cthulhu Dark, Call of Cthulhu, whatever. I have a list of questions that I'll ask, and I tell them from the beginning, this is canon. Whatever you say about the relationship with this other person is canon. So, player X, what does player Y do that really gets on your nerves? Player Y, why does player A have a really good relationship with you? What is something you did together that created that good relationship, and so on? And because I do that as a GM, I started thinking about, what if I did that for myself as a player when it comes to convention games, once I started playing convention games and short prep things.
Electric State, do you remember this, Miranda? I don't remember if we went into this, but Electric State has a sort of take on this, where you assign tension levels to different characters in the group. And they all start either at zero or one, so you're not assigning much at the very beginning, but those tension levels go up or down based on what the player decides their character might do in response to some situation. Oh man, that person completely did it opposite of what I wanted. My tension's going to go up on that. And then there are specific mechanical ways you can use that tension. And I thought it was really, really interesting to look at those. And we didn't go into that in the little one shot that we played. There just wasn't much time. But in terms of a campaign, the ways that tension can be used, and it's all collaborative, so it's not necessarily PvP, I'll use this tension to, you know, kill another character, but there were really interesting sort of ideas embedded within that. And then also the sort of the instruction to the players, hey, pay attention to these moments. And if someone goes along with you, maybe that lowers your tension. If someone goes against you, that raises your tension. And you probably want that, that can be one another attribute or aspect of your decision making. In the moment, oh, I want to raise or lower my tension with this character, so I'm going to do something. I'm going to do X. And then Public Access has a way that they do that, where you're in the beginning, sort of in the intro, each person describes their character and you give the different players their character items, and you give them their items based on what you're hearing about the character from the player. And then that character has that item with a mechanic advantage. And there's something really sweet about that, oh, I heard you say this about this character, so here I think you have this item and it's a treasured thing, and there's a bond that's sort of a little tiny mini bond that gets created with that. So these different mechanics that are out there to almost force relationship, I love them, and I think they make so much sense. Because one thing you said, Rena, that I 100% agree with, a lot of times it doesn't matter what's on the character sheet. It doesn't matter what's internal to the character at all. All that matters is how does that character interact with the world? And if the world you're interacting is just the other players, which a lot of times, one of these sit down, get your character sheet, and you just go, and there's not a lot other than those other characters, focus on what is going to give you the most bang for the buck, which is how does my character interact with the other characters? Not how does my character shoot his gun or use his inventory to his best. You know, a lot of times it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, the They Came From Games do that in the archetypes where they list what that archetype would think of the other archetype. So what does the hunter think of the professor and the mystic, and how would they interact with those characters? And I think as a GM or someone that's writing pregens, that's a gift that you can give your players, is to give them those relationship notes, even if it's just one or two other players at the table, especially for new players that maybe aren't as used to getting into character and picking out those relationships for themselves. I feel like that's a gift that you can give them, because I know I have been at a table or been in a game where I'm staring at that sheet, like the answers to the universe are somewhere on this piece of paper. I just have to find them. I just have to solve the mathematical equation, and then I will have all of the answers. And yes, so much of it, so much of role-playing relies on that relationship piece, that I feel like that's a gift that as game runners you can give to your players, is how they interact with each other. Serena, a question for me, because I find this hard and I'm learning from you. This is honestly the selfish reason why I agreed to do this with Nate, is so that I can be a better role player myself. And that is, how do you handle, or do you tackle, like you said, you pick someone that you're not to play, because then you can get out of your own head and be someone else. That's something that I feel like other people probably find difficult, to make yourself another person. Do you have tips for, like, I don't know, if I wanted to play someone that's really smart, that would be hard for me. I play dumb really well, but playing someone that's witty and like quick thinking and has a lot of quips, that's super difficult for me. It just takes so much effort. And so how do you manage that? Like, it's easy, I feel like, to slide into your own personality. It's easy for me to slide into my own personality or some sort of caricature of my personality in a game. How do you be someone else?
Mm-hmm. So I usually try to start with creating one link between them and me, one thing that is similar, so that it's not a completely alien, foreign thing for me. I struggle with playing the more chaotic, less intelligent characters, because I'm a very cerebral sort of person, and yet I somehow got a reputation for playing chaos characters. And so I try to find one thing with these characters who aren't me that I can relate to. Maybe they do like to read a lot. They're not an academic. They're this kind of foppish, dilettante sort of character who doesn't have much of an internal life, but they do really enjoy reading detective novels. And that's one thing I can connect to. And so that means that they're going to look at the mystery from, you know, I'm Lord Peter Whimsy in this situation, and that's how I'm going to approach this. You know, I'm going to use my little gray cells like Hercule Poirot. You know, so finding a little detail, whether it's a bit of personality or just something they like to do that I also like to do that might inform their character as a starting point, really helps. Other things I do to get into these other characters is I think of characters like them that I've seen in books or TV or movies, and then connect to those characters. Like playing the detective character who's very intellectual, I might think of Hercule Poirot. You know, if I'm thinking of a more chaotic, smarmy, you know, fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants character, I'm going Han Solo. And I'll take them and make them my own, with these little details, right? These little connections. But I'm still using that strong base of a character I know. They may not be me, but I know them because I've seen them, I've read them, I've watched them intimately. I've seen Star Wars 5 million times. I can play a Han Solo character if I think of Han Solo in my mind when I'm playing this. You know, it even could be just a snarky journalist who gets into places with a lot of fast talk. That's still kind of a Han Solo archetype, right? Just as an example. So I'll be thinking of characters with those traits, with those ideals, and then running with them and putting a little bit of my spin on them.
What that brings up for me is I use that same trick to remember. Like every other week we might play, once a month we might play. I forgot what this character that I'm creating actually is. That's the trick I use to actually remember what my characters were. Like Elliot Winters on Delta Green, I forget sometimes what Elliot is about because there might be a 2-3 month break between shooting. And so then I have to remember, oh yeah, I based Elliot on a couple archetypes. One was Harrison Ford's fugitive character. Another was, of course, Matthew McConaughey from season one of True Detective. Like, it's obvious, but that's how I remember. So putting that together as a way to also guide how I want to make these decisions, it makes a lot of sense. Till these things become real enough that you can remember them on their own. I know I need a lot of help to remember. Don't even get me started on voices. Voices, I still don't have a trick that works. If you have a trick that works for that, great, because I'll forget that from week to week. But at least, oh yeah, this is my archetype. This is my famous thing that I know. And I'm not going to forget, you know, I might forget Elliot, but I'm not going to forget season one, True Detective. So that's my crutch.
I use archetypes quite a bit. It's usually my starting place. When I create a character like Lady Elizabeth on Horror on the Orient Express, I started with Downton Abbey and one of the more wealthy, unattached to society, but thinks they can go anywhere in society because, well, who wouldn't like me kind of things, but completely removed from it. And then worked from there and built other things into her. And then, of course, we played for 3 years, so she developed into her own thing. But I started with that one reference point of this is the kind of character I want to create here. And then knowing Downton Abbey pretty well helped me with some of the mannerisms and things. And then I just went from there.
And a testament to you, I knew that. You never told me that. I never heard that. But when I started listening to Horror on the Orient Express and I heard your character, I'm like, this is a Downton Abbey character. Not this is that character. It wasn't a copy. This is a Downton Abbey character. So that worked. And, you know, hats off to you because like that couple episodes in, I'm like, yeah, I could see. Yeah, this is absolutely in the estate upstairs. This is, yeah, it works.
Nate, did you know that I was playing someone that knew nothing of English society, which is just such a stretch from where I am naturally?
Wait, you were in Horror on the Orient Express too?
Oh my God. Back to Rena.
I feel like I have to follow that up with, I called Miranda Maggie for a long time because I joined the Old Ways server before I started listening to anything. And everyone had their character names. And I saw the character name first. And so I'm like, oh, don't stop me now. Maggie. Oh, okay. And so I called her Maggie many times. I don't know how many.
In person.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, in person. And then after, I kept for a while. And then I had to like, I have to stop because I don't know. I'm doing it as a fun joke, but I think people probably just think I still don't know the difference. So yeah. But yeah, Miranda was Maggie to me for a while. And sometimes I'll still call you Maggie just to
warm my heart.
To bring that back.
Yeah. So, Rena, the whole basis of our podcast is rules for being a better role player. Tips are things that we try to do to have more fun at the table. So my last question for you is, if you could distill it all down to one rule, what should the role better rule for getting into character be?
How does your character see the world? Because that can cover a lot of things, whether it's situations, people, whatever. But think about how your character sees the world. Are they cynical? Are they detached? Do they have a love for life? Are they flirtatious all the time? Any of these things, that one perspective on how they see the world is going to inform so much of your role playing. It's going to inform so much of who your character is. Even if you only think of one word, one phrase when you're first starting out, or if you're just picking up a character sheet at a convention, whatever it is, if you can figure out one way your character interacts with the world, it'll immediately help you get into character better, and it will make your character resonate more with the table and with listeners if you're doing it for a podcast.
And so that's it for our show today. Rena, thank you so, so much for joining us as our first guest. It's been great having you. And yeah, special thanks to you for being, I'm not going to say our test subject, but our test subject. And one last time, where can people find you, projects you want to mention, any news that you want to share?
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast. I've enjoyed it very much. So you can find me on the Old Ways podcast, where I am the head of Mythos, running a lot of Cthulhu Dark, Call of Cthulhu, all that sort of thing. And as Tamarisk Anvari on the Coriolis campaign. You can find me on Ain't Slayed Nobody in a variety of one-shots, but also the Down Darker Trails, Bleaker Trails season of, well, everything Old West and weird. And that'll be returning from hiatus very soon. You can find me on the Miskatonic Playhouse, on Symphony Entertainment, How We Roll, a bunch of other places where I pop up occasionally. And you can find my work on Drive-Thru RPG, including the gold bestseller Saturday the 14th, and the two newest scenarios, In Darkness We Wait, which I co-wrote with Joe Trier from How We Roll, and A Long Day's Night, which is 1950s mobsters in San Francisco. And very soon, hopefully during Pride Month, Friends of Dorothy will be making an appearance.
Wonderful. And we hope that everyone joins us again for our next episode when we are back with another Roll Better Rule. I'm Miranda.
I'm Nate.
And this has been Roll Better, a damn fine production.